welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. We have a fabulous film, A Bennett Song Holiday, and the director and actors here, Harley Whalen?
Wallen?
Yep. Wallen, I was close. Yep. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So let's start off right at the beginning. Is this a sequel to something I haven't seen?
It's possible. It is a sequel. I couldn't answer if you've seen it. But yes, the original film was called Bennett's Song. And it was actually supposed to. The original working title was United Colors of Bennett's Song. Kind of a play on words on an ad campaign 100 years ago.
Oh, I know it. I'm old.
Bennett's on, yeah. And so this is the sequel. And it is a holiday movie, but it's really the kind of movie that you can watch any time of year.
Okay, so just so people know, do they need to see the first one to see the second one?
Nope. The few things that reference back is doesn't matter. It's a standalone. It's just like the National Lampoon's Holidays. They're all their own thing.
So let's start off. You're a director and an actor in the same film.
Yes.
Now, how hard is that to do? I mean, I understand even on a big production, when you have a lot of help, that's difficult. But this is an indie production. You have a lot of work to do.
It is. There's a lot of work to do. But it's one of them things that when you build a strong team, a nice core of that you work with, it allows you to do both. And I started as an actor who through acting wanted to be a director and then took my classes and everything else, went to film school online to become a director. And what's really nice for me is that a couple of people on my team, my DP, Alex Gasparetto, he's directed several short films that has done really, really well. My AD, Joseph Victor, same thing. He's a director. He's produced before. So I can take off my director's hat, go in, do my thing, do my takes, and then go back, put my director's hat on and watch the monitor and say, yep, we're good. We're moving on. Or, oh, no, I got to get back and get another take. So that's kind of how we do things. But it's a really cohesive unit, and I think it helps that I started as an actor to allow me to do both.
So let's start there. How does being an actor help you being a good director?
I think I can speak an actor's language. I think I understand their process. I can tell you, as an actor with a lot of people who are technical directors, they will say, be more mad, not understanding that to me, that is not helpful. It doesn't really work because what I have to do is I have to internalize this, ask my character and say, why am I not angry enough? And then I have to figure out why I'm not angry enough and change that. But that changes my whole character to be able to do that. So I can speak languages that they speak and understand. And I can say, hey, just so you remember where you're coming from, tell me how you feel about that person. And they'll answer that to me. And I don't even have to direct them. I just reminded them. And then we'll do another take, and it'll be there.
Okay. Now, speaking of languages, in your film, you speak Swedish.
Yes.
Now, do you really speak Swedish, or is this just for the film?
I am. I'm actually born and raised in Sweden. So that is all genuine and true. And Nancy, who wrote the film, wrote the role for me originally as a Swede, same as this. It's actually very tricky to play someone as similar to you as Cole is to me. Cole is kind of, I don't want to say, but he's the sweetheart version of me. If you stripped away all of my directness and all of my rough edges, I'd be Cole. So the trick is to know where I begin and where I end, where Cole begins and he ends. And normally I don't have to worry about that because I'm in films that where I play a Russian mobster. I know where I begin and where he ends. It's very clear. With this, it's a lot trickier.
So did you enjoy speaking your own language? Do people ask you about that normally?
Yes, absolutely. I've had that come up a lot. And it's one of them things that whenever you do that, fans will remember and they will come up to you. We had just released Betrayed a couple of years ago. I was in LA for a different premiere, and there was three teens and their mom on the side of parking their car coming out, and they were whispering and pointing. And so I kind of figured they must recognize me from something. And they came up and they said, "Can we take a picture with you?" And I said, "Yeah, sure." And they go, "Oh my God, he's not even Russian." And so I knew immediately where they knew me from. So we took the picture. But yeah, they pay very close attention to all these things.
Now, did you involve in the casting of the film or not much casting?
Yes. So me and Nancy, we partnered up on several projects in the past. So we do a lot of that casting together. Usually, Katie, my wife, she's usually the one that narrows down. On our last few films, we've had, you know, almost 1,000 people auditioning. So to narrow it down to the top five per role is a really rough task. So normally Katie does that. And then with the final five, me, Nancy, Katie, we sit down and do and kind of go through everything, because sometimes it's a domino effect. When you pick a certain person, it will trickle down on everybody else. So yeah, we're very, very involved in our own casting. And I think it's crucial when you're an independent filmmaker to get it right.
Now, my question was, do you have musical ability? I mean, there's a lot of music in this film, a lot of singing, and they got to act too. It's not just singing. So yeah. Did you see everybody sing ahead of time and everybody had to play something?
Yeah, I mean, that was when we did the original auditions. It's the same cast as the first Bennett Song film. That was a big part of it. You had to come, you have to be an old school Hollywood talent. You have to be able to act, sing, dance, and play an instrument. I mean, it was like that. I don't play instruments. I've been singing for quite a while, and I've been dancing for quite a while. So I had the multiplicity of some of those skills as well. But for that kind of film, it's definitely very important. Now, and that's all their own voices and instruments and everything else. So that is completely done by the people you see on screen.
Now, you have a definite, I would say, distinct shooting style, I've noticed. I do find that you do a lot of close-ups at times. And when you're tight, I find you like to come in tight, like really tight. And then when you want something to be open, you really back me up.
Yeah.
Now, how come you don't really like that middle ground? I didn't see any middle shots. Never, ever do you have me halfway in a room. It's always tight or far away.
I think the people that I love watching, you know, I love Tarantino, I love Michael Mann, and when they provide setting, they open up and they show you setting, and then we allow you to get into what you're doing. But when you're into what you're doing, I like the camera close, because when you're close enough to see what a person thinks and feels as an audience, I think that transfers to them. And they get to be involved emotionally. I think if anything, being out into that medium space is a tricky place for me, because it's always about the right time, the right shot to do that. And there are films when I've done more of it, but you're right. I do like more of a master or open shot. And then I do like coming in and being close, where we can feel what the subject feels.
I find the one time you cheated on this, and I want to ask why you did, is when you speak Swedish to the mom. I find you really cheat on that shot. I've never seen you use that shot other than there. Was that a distinct, just to give the surprise element? Is that why it was shot like that, so you get a barrier of the reaction shot?
I wish that was the reason. The reason was actually that we ran over on time, and the coverage was going to have to be a two-shot medium, because if we did the coverage the way we had originally intended to, we were going to run short on time. So that's the sad reality, especially with indie film. I hear from, you know, when I have Hollywood talent in, you know, they shoot 3 pages a day and 4 pages a day. And I'm like, oh, that sounds nice. I'm like, we're shooting 6 and 7. So I understand the dilemma with that, but that's the true answer is we were short on time.
Fair enough. I have to ask. I know.
Absolutely.
Now, you brought up Hollywood talent. You have Corbin Burnson in this film and Dennis Haskins.
Yeah.
Now, do you find, I mean, obviously you have your independent cast, and then you have people that people recognize, the name people.
Yeah.
How are they to work with? Do you find they take direction well because they've done it, or are they difficult because they've done it too many times?
You know what? We've been really blessed, but I think I've heard horror stories, so I know that this happens regularly. But I can give you – I'll answer your question. I'll try to give advice to independent filmmakers because I think this is important. When you have people come in that are you know, made $10 million on a film in the past, and now they're going to come onto your independent set, if you're not prepared on time, doing your due diligence, doing your running your lines like you're supposed to, if you seem like an amateur, then you're going to have a frustrating time with them. But if you run a tight ship, they will see what you're doing, and they will be a lot more gentle on you with things happening as you progress. But it comes with you behaving like a professional and doing what you're supposed to. That's for sure. We've been fortunate. I mean, I've worked with people in the past that I've heard nightmares about, and they've been great with me. So I think that's the big thing. You know, be a pro and they'll be a pro.
Now, you have to work with adults and children at the same time. How's working with the children? Obviously, the adults are going to listen. They're like, we're going to go with our marks. Are the children listening to you? Do you have to find a little bit more prep time on them before you get to their shots? How does that
work? Yeah, we definitely did our due diligence with casting with the kids. We did several callbacks before we selected them. And the things we were looking for were things like, how easy are they to direct? How well do they follow? Also helps, I'm a father. I have kids as old as 20 and as young as 6. So I think my ability to speak kind of the same thing on their level helps. We really, truthfully, when we shoot these Bennett Song movies, we are almost like a family unit on set, off set. We're all, you know, text grouping each other, and we're all making fun, and we really act and behave like a family. So it makes it a lot easier, too, that we have that close-knit bond with each other.
Now, you keep saying, I want to discuss makeup also before. Hang on. Sorry. I'm back up. You have very different cultures represented in your film. I found you found one of this, one of that. Was that the whole plan? To be multiple of everybody?
We really wanted something that looked like America. That was kind of the goal, is just to show the melting pot that we are, so that people would get a sense of heritage and background, but also being an American with that, because that's me. I mean, I moved here at 25 from Sweden, and I'm an American at this point. I've lived here, I'm a citizen, but I still have all my Swedish heritage. And I bring that as an asset coming here. And I think that's a part that we wanted to show, is that different doesn't make you better or worse. It just makes you different. And it's pretty cool to learn about cultures and people. You don't have to agree with everything, but it's pretty fascinating. That's for sure.
Now, I know your lead character, I've forgotten her name. I apologize. But you know who I'm talking about. Her makeup, I find, is very distinct of anybody else.
Or do you mean Calhoun, our daughter?
Your daughter.
Yes. I think she carries a part of that personality because she is an outstanding artist. She is an outstanding musician and singer, and now an actress that's doing quite well. She just moved to L.A., and she that distinctness came out. Our makeup artist, she pretty much said what she wanted to look like. And it was a step up from where we were on the original film, where she was a little bit more toned down. And I felt that she cut her hair and it's a bit of that rebellious feel to her, but still soft and gentle, which I thought was a really good way to go with the story, to make it more intriguing and interesting.
I like as an actress how she acts. She almost like she thinks about, like a teenager would think before she speaks. And I thought as a director, because you're going action, and she goes one, two, and talks. And I'm like, oh my God, it's exactly like most teenagers. They don't want to interrupt. They don't want to insult anybody. So they're thinking about what they're going to say. Even though she knows the line, she's doing it exactly the way. So when you're filming, do you find you're waiting for her to talk? Because as a viewer, I did at times. I'm like, oh, got to remember, it's a teenager. I got to wait, let her think. I have to get into her head. She made me think a lot about her character.
I think that's kind of her way. She has such ease on camera that she's never rushed to anything. And I like that, especially for this character. We did a movie called Eternal Code, where she was a little bit different and had a little bit more of an assertive style. Ash and Bone, a horror film that we have coming out. She's also in a few small scenes. But her impression on me as an actor is she's very capable of taking wherever the story wants it to go. And I think she is very introspective in this role. And that fits very well with her character. Nancy wrote it with her in mind because she was obviously in the first one. So I think it's a tremendous fit. I think it's her best performance for me that I've worked with her. And I've been in several films and seen her have, you know, statuettes on stage. I think this one will probably bring her more.
Well, that's great. I do want to discuss a couple minor plot points. I won't go into them. I like the twist of the brothers. I thought that was excellent. I want to give kudos to Nancy's Justin Bieber on auto-tune joke. Made me laugh. I physically broke up on that. So let's get back to directing again. Now, when you're setting up a shot, like the bar shot, how do you decide how you're going to set that up? Are you like, I know this location, I'm getting this location, or do you don't know your location at a time and you got to look for it?
Most of the time, me and my director of photography have visited the location before. And most of the time we have a shot list, and most of the time we follow the shot list 80 to 90%. Every now and then, when you see the scene come alive, you go, oh, we have to get this shot. But in general, we're pretty close to our original outline of how we're going to shoot it. And both me and Alex like shot lists. Sometimes we do a liquid shot list. So we do the GIFs, the GIFs from other films that gives us a color, a template essentially, and a feel for how we're shooting it. So on Ash and Bone, it's very different camera work than it is on Benesong Holiday. And on Eternal Code was almost completely on Steadicam, which you don't hardly see in Benesong Holiday at all. Only on the very big performance shots do you see the Steadicam. So it all varies with me. I think each story is gonna ask the director to be told a certain way. And if I direct it, it'll look very different than from somebody else directing it, because the story will tell each person a different thing. Or at least a different feel, and it'll come out in that, how you shoot it, how the performances go, and all those type of things. But yeah.
Now, in this film, I've noticed you have more extras than I think I've seen in an indie film in years. So
that, we're known for that. We're pretty blessed for an independent film to have the connections we have. We just shot a TV series that takes place, all over the place, but we have several hundred extras in certain scenes. We have a biker scene where there's a SWAT team coming in and arresting a bunch of bikers. And I bet you we had, same thing, about 100 people there with about 50 bikers and everything else. And people are always like, how do you do that with an independent thing? And I think we've, over the years, always been good to our extras. So we have a good time with them. They get to be a part. We don't treat them like they, you know, they have COVID. We treat them like family. So they're a part of it. They get to eat and hang out with us. We don't separate cast and extras. We all kind of mingle and have a good time. So I think people really appreciate that.
I have one question I do want to go back to. Do you shoot out your stars first, or do you let them stay the whole shoot?
So we shoot them out on their days. So, for instance, Corbin came in for 3 days. So we shot all his scenes in 3 days, and it was just nonstop Corbin for 3 days. And then we had Dennis in for 3 days, and it was just nonstop Dennis for 3 days. So that's how we do it. We shoot them completely in a vacuum in and of itself. And then after that, we usually shoot by location, which can get tricky for actors because they got to remember where they are in the story, because you just shot a scene that's, you know, an hour into the movie, and now you're about to shoot a scene that's 15 minutes in. And you have to remember who you are, where did I come from, where am I going, and how do I feel about these people each time, which can get tricky. But that's where the director has to protect the red herring and make sure that we have enough rehearsals and time to go through those things.
So at what point did your cast figure out, or if they did comment on it, it was a Dickens Christmas Tale. It took me a little while to figure that out. But in the middle, I'm like, oh, I know what this is about now.
I think most of the youngins probably don't. And I think people like Corbin and Aphrodite, you know, they figured it out very early. But yeah, it absolutely is. It was funny, too, when we did this story, because we sent out this. Nancy had the biggest writer's block writing this. And she sent the script to me 1 week before it went out to cast. So thankfully, we didn't have a whole lot of adjustments to make. We were all kind of worried about that because I'm like, Nancy, we gotta get going on this. And she had a hard time figuring out the storyline for me and Aphrodite, our own story, which is pretty hilarious, alongside the main story and the story with the bandmates. So to tie all that together, she had a really hard time, but when it hit, it just hit. And she was done. And I remember I sat down and read it, and I was like, wow, like I have two little tiny things to adjust. After that, this can go out. So, yeah, it was really, really cool. She did a great, great job. Had me very nervous, though.
Now, are you any good at sign language, too? You speak Swedish. You can do all these hats. How about signing?
Signing, no. I learned what I need to on set. And we have interpreters on set the entire time. So that was pretty cool because, you know, a lot of people, they take the easy route to not cast deaf people, not cast kids, not involve animals. And we took on like all of it. So that was definitely had me nervous. And I said, I don't ever want it to get uncomfortable for anyone. So I said, it's going to be really crucial that we have an interpreter on set all days when we have somebody that, so that they never feel left out, that they're always a part. And what was really cool is several of the teens in the film learned so that they could kind of get by well enough where I have to do letters, which takes too long. So it's a lot easier with the interpreter. But yeah, that's a good question. We wanted them to feel a part, and the interpreter really provided that.
So the animation on the Astral Productions,
yes.
How long did that take? Obviously, they're filming a green screen in one room, and you're filming the next shot in another room. I get that part.
Yeah.
How long did it take you go, okay, we only have so much in the budget. We can only do this, and it's got to look like kids are doing it. So did you have to take it down from your original idea, or you just said, nope, this will work?
The original script, actually, Nancy had it that the kids snuck in and that they had a light to make it look like they were. And I said, that's not going to work. I said, we have to figure out a way to make this work through the cameras. And Fred, my editor, he sent me a few options, and I love what we did finally, because it wasn't too advanced, but it still did the trick. It didn't look cheesy. It kind of gave you that, that's good enough for a kid, and it's good enough for the grown-up to kind of believe, especially in a family film. So I think we found that happy medium where those things were all set without it looking, you know, sci-fi or something. I thought we found a very happy medium with it. But that was Fred. I got to give Fred credit for that, because I was nervous about that the entire time. It just felt like a really tricky thing to do to get it right, especially, like I said, in a family film, because it has to hold water to the adults watching with their kids too, and not be over the head of the kids.
This might be a better question for Nancy, but she's not here, so you're going to have to answer it. Sure. I really thought at the beginning of the film we were having a road trip film with the band.
Uh-huh.
Now,
you thought that was...
That's what I thought. I don't read blurbs or anything, so I go into every film cold, so I don't know anything about a film before I watch it. Now, does that film exist, or is that film coming?
We don't have that yet. It's really funny, though. These kids have made... Bennett Songyan's like they're trying to push for sequels, and Bennett Songs in Space, Western Bennett Song Underwater, Pirate Bennett Song, like we have all these things that they want to do, and it's just fun to do. I don't know if we will revisit the Bennett Song franchise again. I think the audience will ultimately decide that, but definitely would be fun to see how the band handled a tour.
Okay. Last question before we get into your fun questions. Yeah. What is harder to do, acting or directing?
Directing is more complex because you don't control everything. With acting, I can, even if I have somebody on the other side of the screen with me that's not giving me what I need, I can imagine that, and I can still do my part. With directing, I have to make sure that everybody is, from the background people not looking into the camera or being stiff and turning into robots, to protecting the red herring, because actors want to develop their character. They want their character to bloom, and it's easy that they pull the story with them when they do these things. And as a director, you have to somehow make them feel good and still remain in control of the storyline and make sure that the choices they make are good choices that make sense for the character all the way through, not just in this scene. I remember somebody said this when I took one of my first acting classes. They had a scene where they had told the girl that she was, I guess, a rape victim, and it made her really jumpy. So she was at a bar, and somebody came up from behind with a manly voice and ordered a drink, and she was supposed to be very jumpy. But in scenes that they have already shot, she had been in other settings where she didn't react like that at all. And that's the stuff that can happen when you don't pay attention to the details and protect that red herring. So now somebody's going to watch it, and they're going to wonder, what happened to her there? Why wasn't she like that there? And that'll jar you out just a little bit, and it can lose interest for the whole film. So these little choices are so important. And as a director, you have to make sure that it stays in line with the red herring, with the story, and with the character as it's written all the way through, not just in the scenes we're shooting today.
Okay, it's time for fun questions, then you're out of here. Your first time on the show, your favorite film, please.
Favorite film, I will say today, The Usual Suspects. I love, love, love that show because they trick me.
Since your film involves music, your favorite musical?
Ooh. Star is Born. I don't know why it made a big impression on me.
There's four versions. Which one would you be referring to?
I think ultimately I like the it's a 70s version the best.
Barbra Streisand.
But I gotta say I think This one, it was a little bit like bubblegum, but watch it again. It is really, really good with Lady Gaga and what's his name?
Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper, yes. I really do think it's better than we gave it credit for originally. It became a little bubblegum, but no, it's very good.
Since I've never had Swedish food that I'm aware of, what dish from Sweden should I try?
If you're a fish fan, I would definitely say salmon in Sweden is amazing. We do a whole lot with it. I think the easiest thing to do is go to IKEA and have their salmon shrimp sandwich, because that's a very basic, simple Swedish food. If you're not a fish fan, Swedish meatballs with mashed potatoes are always a hit.
So before we let you go, everybody needs to know where to find two films. So please tell them where to find both films.
Bennett's Song is currently sold to Fuse TV and Super Channel. So you can't stream that everywhere, but it is on Vudu. Bennett's Song Holiday, you can watch it on Amazon. You can watch it on Vudu as well.
Thank you for your time and have a great day.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.